Hello, this is Dr. David Freeman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Do you get brain fog? Have a hard time remembering things? Do you suffer from mood swings? These symptoms could be a result of the foods you are consuming. What you're eating may also contribute to the cause of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Fueling our brain with the right food is just as important as fueling it with the right information. Today, we explore the true meaning behind the popular term food for thought. Joining us is Max Lugavere, author of the New York Times best-selling book, Genius Foods. If you want to optimize your brain health and achieve peak mental performance, stay tuned. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Freedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a health and science journalist and filmmaker. He's been featured on NBC Nightly News, The Today Show, The Wall Street Journal, and appears regularly on Dr. Oz's show, Rachel Ray, and The Doctors. He's a sought-after speaker and has given talks at South by Southwest, TEDx, and the New York Academy of Sciences. He's the director of the film Breadhead, a revolutionary documentary on dementia prevention through diet and lifestyle. Welcome to the show, New York Times best-selling author of Genius Foods, Max Lugavere.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Now, before we get into how our food affects our brain, first briefly share with us your personal story and why you wrote Genius Foods.
Yeah, so I started my career as a journalist. I was a bit of a generalist at the time, but I worked for a TV network called Current TV, which allowed me the opportunity to learn from some of the best storytellers and journalists in the world. In fact, the president of programming of Current TV that gave me my job gave Anderson Cooper his first job, Lisa Ling. He's known for picking unconventional journalistic talent and giving them a platform. So I did that for, 5-6 years in my early, up until my late 20s. And really, felt like it was a form of grad school in a way. I learned so much. And then when I left Current to try to sort of figure out where I was going to go with my career in my late 20s, it was at that moment where, I started spending more and more time in New York City, which is where I'm from. And it was the first time really in my adult life that I'd had the ability to spend, a decent amount of time with my mom and my brothers. I was, for the previous 6 years, beholden to the rigorous TV schedule of filming a nightly show, which is what I hosted on Current. And before that, I was in college. So, it really allowed me this incredible opportunity to spend more time with my mom, who I love and who, I'm the oldest child. So I really kind of enjoyed that period. But after not too long, me and my younger brothers started to notice that my mom, who had always had a spirited way about her, started to show really strange symptoms of brain fog and memory loss. And she also had a change her gait, which is the way, that she walked. And, my mom's a New Yorker, very fast walking. New Yorkers walk everywhere. And suddenly it seemed as if my mom's stride had become more of a shuffle. And this was very confusing to me and my younger brothers because, for one, we had no prior family history of any kind of neurodegenerative disease. But on the other hand, my mom was young. She was 58 at the time. And because I had the time, it led to me going around the country with my mom to some of the top hospitals that we have, all in search of answers, trying to figure out what the hell was up, with my mom. And it was at the Cleveland Clinic in 2011 that for the first time, my mom was diagnosed with a neurodegenerative condition. And this was an incredibly traumatic week for me to try to come to terms with that. And that was coupled with the fact that nearly every single doctor's office that I had been in with my mom, including at the Cleveland Clinic, which you might almost consider a cathedral to Western medicine, I experienced the same thing every single time, what I've come to call diagnose and adios. Basically, doctors are undertrained when it comes to nutrition. And, due to the current healthcare climate, you get about 15 minutes if you're lucky with your average physician. And it just left me feeling hopeless and full of fear and panic and, really kind of wanting more answers than what I was able to get in those doctor's offices, to be totally honest. So I went back to New York with my mom, and basically, as soon as the emotional trauma subsided, I became obsessed with learning anything that I possibly could about how diet and lifestyle might have contributed to the development of my mom's condition, both to see if there was anything that might be done to help her, certainly. But when I stumbled upon the shocking revelation that most of these conditions begin in the brain decades before the first symptom, it became a very strong call to action to me to also learn whatever I might in terms of prevention, realizing that I now, for the first time, had this risk factor, you know, myself, and not wanting to ever experience personally what my mom, you know, had experienced and continues to experience. So, yeah, so this has really motivated a never-ending inquiry into how to eat and live in a way that helps our brains not only survive, but thrive. You know, today, if you make it to the age of 85, you have a 50% chance of being diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. But it seems that people are being diagnosed younger and younger. And, you know, even without the presence of a diagnosis, people are complaining of memory problems at very young ages. You know, 1 in 7 younger people complains of memory problems. So this is something that I see every single day in my mom. It's tragic. It's horrible. And I just really wanted to do my part to prevent this from happening to, you know, even one other person, if that was potential. Yeah.
What percentage would you say that this issue is from the foods we're eating? Is it a high percentage?
Well, the estimates vary. So 1/3 of Alzheimer's cases, according to an article published in Lancet Neurology, might be owed to potentially modifiable risk factors. So, I mean, everything from smoking to obesity to type 2 diabetes, these are all pretty significant risk factors for developing Alzheimer's disease. But then another 1/3 of cases might be owed to environmental risk factors. Vitamin D deficiency was identified as being the most, the strongest of the environmental risk factors. So, and then you look at air pollution. You know, air pollution has been recently linked to the development of Alzheimer's disease. So no matter where you look, there are different estimates. But what seems to really be the consensus, regardless of the estimates, is that for a very significant number of people, it appears to be a potentially preventable condition.
Right. What are a couple of the top genius foods we should be eating?
Yeah, so when it comes to food, you really want to give your brain the micronutrients that it requires, along with the fat-protecting antioxidants that are going to help shield your brain as it ages against insults contributed by the modern world. So foods like avocados, rich in carotenoids and vitamin E, really help to sort of act as a sword and shield for your brain. Dark leafy greens have been shown in a Rush University study. People that consume a large bowl of dark leafy greens every day have brains that look about 11 years younger on scans. We want to look to low sugar fruits like blueberries and strawberries that contain powerful antioxidants like anthocyanin, the blue pigment in blueberries. And then strawberries have a compound called fisetin, which has been shown to strengthen synaptic connections, which is really where your memories reside. I'm a big fan of a lower carbohydrate approach. So I eschew foods like grains for the most part, and really am very diligent about my consumption of starchier foods like sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes I'll eat on occasion, but really I'm reaching for vegetables, which are a rich source of these micronutrients. And then when it comes to healthy fats, I'm a huge fan of wild salmon. I don't think that consuming farm-raised salmon is the end of the world. Certainly for a family that is making the switch from, you know, eating pasta and processed foods for dinner, it's a low-cost option. But, of course, you really want to, if you have the option, to reach for wild salmon. It's much healthier. And then eggs. I'm a big fan of eggs. Egg yolks are nature's multivitamin. And then grass-fed beef. You know, people we'll debate about the health quality of beef and animal products and things like that. And meat is a huge spectrum. But when it comes to grass-fed and ideally organic red meat. I think it's a health food from the standpoint of the brain.
That's great. You know, I have a patient who's in his late 90s. He still drives, jogs, plays golf. His mind is sharp as a tack, and he's the epitome of good health. And I asked him, I said, what do you feel is your secret to longevity and having such a sharp mind? And he told me for over half a century, every day without fail, he eats a cup of blueberries for breakfast. From your research, could that magic bullet be his fountain of youth?
You know, blueberries have been shown that those anthocyanins that accumulate in blueberries, first of all, blueberries have a range of them, and they've been shown to accumulate in the hippocampus, which is the brain's memory center. And right. So, you know, you think about everything that makes life worth it, it's our memories, our ability to think and to feel, and that all comes from the brain. So blueberry anthocyanins have been shown to accumulate in this vulnerable region of the brain. That's the first structure, really, to be affected by Alzheimer's disease, or one of the first structures to be affected by Alzheimer's disease. And they act to shield it against aging. And I mean, it does not surprise me in the slightest. I mean, in fact, they've done a study in women that found that the highest berry consumers as compared to the lowest berry consumers had brains that looked about 2.5 years younger. So, yeah, it's no surprise to me. And, of course, berries are a low-sugar fruit.
Right.
They're full of antioxidants. And, of course, they're delicious. So, you know, being happy and treating yourself, food that tastes good, you know, all part of the equation.
That's great. What are some foods people are eating that contribute to cognitive decline? You shared some good foods. What are the bad?
Well, absolutely the processed foods, which usually have two traits working against them. So first, it's the overabundance of rapidly digested carbohydrates. So today, you know, 60% of the calories that we're consuming come from ultra-processed foods that are made usually of three nutrient-poor and energy-dense plants. These are wheat, corn, and rice. And so we're just eating wheat, corn, and rice pretty much at every meal, and we're snacking on these plants. And usually, the form that they come in, you know, they're pulverized into these powders, almost like dust, that our bodies have no problem absorbing. And what this does is it causes very rapid elevations of blood sugar. And also insulin basically comes in to do the cleanup work, essentially. Yeah. And 40% of Alzheimer's cases might be owed to chronically elevated insulin alone. So when it comes to Alzheimer's prevention, for me, it's about reducing consumption of foods that cause your insulin to become elevated, especially chronically. The other product that I would say is worth getting rid of are grain and seed oils like canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil, grapeseed oil, safflower oil. These oils are highly processed and they're damaged over the course of that processing. So I recommend being vigilant in your avoidance of products that contain these oils. So, I mean, these are going to be your commercial bakery products, most granola bars. Most commercial salad dressings, nearly all salad dressings that you buy in a bottle that are already mixed are full of these incredibly unhealthy oils. Again, canola oil, corn oil, soybean oil.
Where do you fall?
And usually
they have healthy
packaging.
Yeah, what about avocado and extra virgin olive oil? I've had plant-based docs on the show. They say stay clear of these oils. And other experts say they offer crucial fats that contribute to the health of our brain. From your research, where do you stand on those two oils?
I absolutely stand by extra virgin olive oil, you know, because we not only have population level evidence to say that extra virgin olive oil benefits and is associated with beneficial health outcomes, but we can actually look to randomized control trials, which are the kinds of trials required to prove cause and effect. And we could see that liberal olive oil consumption is associated with improved cognition, better cardiometabolic health, and even weight loss potentially. So when it comes to extra virgin olive oil, I am definitely a fan, and I think the evidence supports this stance. Avocado oil is also very, very good, but actually some of the most beneficial compounds are the polyphenols that are found in extra virgin olive oil, which avocado oil does not have. So that's why I'm very much a fan of extra virgin olive oil. And I'll, of course, use avocado oil, but my preference is for extra virgin olive oil.
Me too.
And just to the plant-based doctors who are against added oils, you know, I think I'm not a fan of just, you know, adding lots of fats for no reason. But I really do think that the research, when it comes to like being truly evidence-based, supports using extra virgin olive oil. I mean, they use it in the Mediterranean dietary pattern. It's a staple in, you know, the Mediterranean region of the world where they use extra virgin olive oil as a sauce. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm too. That's good. Let me ask you about coffee. It's become a very controversial topic. We're told it's good for us one day, then a study comes out saying it's bad for us. Where does coffee fall on your list of genius foods?
So I'm definitely pro coffee, with the caveat that, you know, people are different and have different sensitivities to it. So for me, coffee works really well. I drink about a cup or two a day. But in terms of the evidence, there seems to be an association between coffee consumption and reduced risk for Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and even multiple sclerosis. Coffee is a very powerful source of polyphenol antioxidants. So, you know, I think overall it's a very healthy beverage for people that are sensitive to acidic beverages, for people that are, you know, caffeine sensitive. There is a genetic basis for being a little bit more sensitive to the effects of caffeine. I think it's just the kind of thing where you really have to, you know, feel it out. But for me, certainly, I'm a fan of it. And if you do drink it, I think you should feel good about drinking it. What I think you should probably not do is throw in the, you know, the sugar and the creamers and the artificial sweeteners that too often typifies a coffee beverage today. But when it comes to black coffee, I'm a fan.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, I'm glad to be learning all this info today because I actually have a photographic memory. I'm just out of film. So this is helping me. What about these brain supplements that are sold? Many promising improved memory. Do any of these get the MAC seal of approval?
You know, very few, because usually they come packed with stimulants. And, you know, if you're drinking coffee, the amount of caffeine that you're consuming can quickly add up if you're using any of these supplements. So I'm actually not a fan of the vast majority of them. I would be very careful. You know, everything from nootropics, which is a term that, you know, basically defines any kind of cognition enhancing supplement product. You really have to assess each product on its own merits. And, you know, most of them do not impress me. And actually, I think that, you know, the ultimate memory enhancer, the ultimate nootropic is food. So too often people are spending their hard-earned money on these supplements when their diets have not been cleaned up. And, you know, there's all this low-hanging fruit, so to speak, in people's diets where they can really get a lot of bang for their buck in terms of improving memory performance, and yet they're spending money on these supplements. So, you know, I'm the closer a supplement is to its food from which it comes from, you know, the bigger of a fan I am. But at the end of the day, there's no such thing as a biological free lunch. And so oftentimes taking these supplements, which, you know, often contain synthetic chemicals and things like that, I just think it's a little bit risky.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, I think I know why you have so many female fans and followers. It's not just your good looks. You actually advocate their favorite comfort food, chocolate. Share with us, is there a certain type of chocolate you recommend?
Yeah, so chocolate, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of food, as you can tell. I love chocolate, especially dark chocolate. When it's 85% or higher, you know, it is rich in these flavanols, which have been shown to boost cognition. In a fairly robust meta-analysis, you know, the literature really seems to be in favor of consuming chocolate. People that habitually consume it have sharper memories, but really quality is key. So you want to reach for chocolate that is 85% cacao or higher. That's going to mean that it has less sugar. And you also want to make sure that your cocoa on the ingredients list has not been processed with alkali. This is also called Dutch processing, but essentially when cocoa has been processed with alkali, it becomes less nutritious. So But yeah, I mean, if you are a fan of chocolate, rejoice, because it is absolutely a brain food. And that's why I call it a genius food in my book.
Yeah, you made a lot of ladies smile just now. They're like, see, honey, I can have chocolate. And then the man saying, no, you remember enough of my flaws. I don't want you eating chocolate and remembering more of them. Let me ask you, you mentioned fish briefly. You know, they contain the essential fatty acids, which offer beneficial benefits to the brain. Most of my patients tell me they're afraid to eat fish because of pollution and mercury. I know in my book, Food Sanity, I really delve into this topic because I'm a fish lover. I'm curious, what are your views when it comes to fish and brain health? And is this a big concern with the mercury scare?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, Martha Claire Morris is a researcher at Rush University. She does some very good research in this space. And what she found in a paper published, I believe, 2 years ago, was that the benefits of consuming fish outweighed the potential risk. So, you know, with food, it's always about that balance, right? Weighing the risk versus the benefit. And when it comes to consuming fatty fish, first of all, the most beneficial fish for our brains tend to be low in mercury. So that's salmon, mackerel, sardines. I'm a fan of all three. Those are low mercury fish, and they're very high in the kinds of fats that we want for our brain.
Right.
But regardless, when it comes to just seafood in general, what Martha Claire Morris found in this study was that the benefits outweigh the risks. And so, you know, that's enough for me. I think mercury is obviously something that we need to be cognizant of. But as a way of just feeling a little bit better about your choices, I think it's important for people to know that our bodies have powerful, detox algorithms hardwired. Our liver is a powerful detox organ, and we have an incredible ability to fight back against toxic exposures, but only when we give our bodies the right ingredients to do this. And so that's where I think really eating a diet that is rich in a diverse array of plants really comes into play. You know, cruciferous vegetables I talk about in my book as really helping the body detox, both in terms of giving your body the raw material for its own detox chemicals, but then also providing the stimulus so that your body actually does detox. I think it's all a really important part of the equation. And, I'm a big fan, again, of wild salmon, sardines, mackerel, and I'll even eat tuna occasionally.
Yeah. While we're on the topic, what about fish oil? I know there's research showing it's good for the brain, and now research saying stay away from it's not good for the brain. What are your thoughts?
Well, my preference is always to get these nutrients from their whole food sources. And that certainly applies to the fat found in fish. So on days that I'm consuming sardines or wild salmon, there's no need to take fish oil. On the other hand, I do think that having a high-quality fish oil in the house, and particularly in your refrigerator, because these oils are very delicate, is worthwhile, particularly if you avoid fish for whatever reason. If you don't like it, if you find it too expensive, I think having a high-quality fish oil is potentially valuable. Actually, if people go to my website at maxlugavere.com, I offer a guide to some of the supplements that I use personally that people might be able to use to boost their brain function. And fish oil is on my supplement list. It just becomes critically important to make sure that it's a high-quality brand because, again, fish oil is very delicate. And if it's been sitting out on a shelf for months, if it hasn't been manufactured with rigorously, quality controlled, protocols, then, I wouldn't trust it. But certainly some are beneficial.
That's great. And one last thing I want to ask, I had a few people told me to ask you this, and then you were coming on the show. In your book, you share how we can improve the health of our brain, but is there a point of no return, or can people, even with advanced Alzheimer's, improve their memory following the guidelines you lay out in Genius Foods?
You know, there's a small handful of studies that have offered hope in terms of improving cognition in people with late-stage Alzheimer's disease. Well, I shouldn't say late-stage, but more, mild to moderate. But we do not have enough evidence to say in any capacity that is a reversible condition. Nobody's ever recovered from Alzheimer's disease, and I wish that weren't the case. But that being said, no matter how old you are, no matter what state your cognition is in, there is always room to, if not improve, to stabilize your cognition. Right. So I'm a big fan of taking sort of a kitchen sink approach and cleaning up one's diet, engaging more. I mean, they've recently updated the guidelines for how a physician might treat mild cognitive impairment, which is considered pre-dementia. It's a form of cognitive decline that might be potentially reversible. And exercise is now something that you might get written on a prescription pad. So you're never too young or too old. And, I maintain hope that once we are able to do these long-term studies that, you know, we're going to see that our brains maintain plasticity well into old age. So I'm very hopeful.
Great. Such great information. Thanks so much for being with us today and sharing such vital info that we all need to consume and explore. I feel my brain retaining more just from chatting with you. So I appreciate you being here. To get your copy of Genius Foods, go to geniusfoodsbook.com. And to learn more about Max, his film, Breadhead, and informative articles that he's written, go to maxlugavere.com. And you can follow him on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Max Lugavere. And you can stay up to date with me on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Health Radio Doc. If you heard something today that you'd love to share with somebody, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at togoodhealthradio.com. Peruse our podcast library and share segments of interest with friends, family, and coworkers, and on social media. This information is just too important to keep to yourself. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.